name the leaders?
Just backtrack a couple of sentences is fine. Regarding Hildegard Martens, you were just saying the paper and the
proposal
to work in a certain area.
In when I began to work for MCC in 75 and in 76, I stopped in the Southern Ontario area and renewed acquaintances and began to push for the implementation of the suggestions and proposals for a program that had been brought forth in Hildegard Martens' report and also in my paper. Those proposals then went back and forth from MCC Canada to MCC Ontario, and it wasn't quite sure who should handle it and what its nature ought to be. Eventually, MCC Ontario, it became clear after putting up somewhat of a fight in Winnipeg that a decision had to be made and that it was probably best to leave it in to put it with MCC Ontario.
Was there a particular reason why Canada didn't go with it? Simply because they didn't want to intrude on the provincial jurisdiction, or was it more than that?
I'm not sure that they didn't want to. It just wasn't getting done. And
wasn't a priority out there.
There were all kinds of good words said, but it just didn't get done. And so then you try something else, try to work somewhere else.
So the Ontario then decided to take
it. They asked me in the summer of 76 to do another study and to write up a more detailed proposal. And I believe my report of that is dated June of 1976. About a 9-page report, I believe.
I'd like to see that sometime.
And in it I'll find a number of alternatives for how this thing might be approached. And then in the fall of 1976, we were putting together a committee. It consisted of Jake Reimer, the Mennonite Brethren from Port Rowan, Peter Giesbrecht, Aaron Wall, Ray Schlegel, then there was Bill Giesbrecht from the Leamington area, from the EMMC, and then we also received George Conrad, who is with the EMMC, although his membership is with the United Mennonite Conference in the Leamington area. Then we hired...
Who decided to get that committee going?
I think it was me who contacted most of the people and talked it through with them. I know I recall several. I talked it through at considerable length with Jig Reimer and with Aaron Wall. I don't recall talking it through at quite such length with Peter Giesbrecht.
And Ray Schlegel.
He was more involved ever since the June report, which MCC Ontario accepted and then officially committed itself to starting a program, and in the fall of 1976 budgeted $10,000 for it, I believe. So then action had to be taken. It had been approved.
So now there was an idea of setting up a kind of advisory committee that would help to give direction to whatever you're going to do.
Mm-hmm. So then after considerable discussion, I think we had two meetings, the advisory committee, and then we decided to recommend to MCC Ontario that David Friesen be hired, first for an 18-month period, and at some point during the course of that period, Helen, his wife, came on as a part-time employee, and we also received some money from the government. Indeed, that was an incentive. There had been almost an offer. It almost amounted to an offer from the Secretary of State Department in London a person by the name of Pat Loback had said things that almost amounted to, look, if MCC will get behind this, we would like to give you money. Later on, it turned out that we had some difficulty getting it, but it, we got it. And without that promise, we might not have hired anybody full-time. I'm not sure. But without that, without counting on some additional money. We also received $10,000 from MCC Canada. Or at least they budgeted for it. We didn't quite spend that much.
Why was Dave Friesen selected?
He was selected because he had been in the work for some time.
What work?
The work of helping people to get immigration papers or citizenship papers. At that time, it wasn't quite so common to get citizenship. Indeed, that whole door had not yet really opened. It was more a matter of working with immigration. And he had good contacts with people like Charlie Moore of the London Immigration Office. He and Helen were doing this sort of work. Indeed, I should add, MCC Ontario had been paying him an amount up to $100 a week to cover expenses and also a certain amount on an hourly rate for certain kinds of services for some months before all this. So it was, MCC Ontario had been involved, and it was now step of enlarging the program.
You know how that involvement with MCC Ontario began initially, this reason?
I believe the EMMC Field Council came...
Ontario Field Council?
I doubt whether that's the way it happened. Maybe it happened as a personal request from David Friesen. I better not speak to that.
Okay. A question that would be interesting if...
I don't know the facts on that.
All right.
And I would be interested in knowing that too.
Because if I'm right, if Friesen was doing a fair amount of work in that area simply as an EMMC minister in the Port Rowan area, and had already been doing it actually in an earlier assignment in Aylmer, in EMMC, began then already, and slowly became more and more involved and was doing more and more, and slowly worked his way up to being somewhat of an expert in the area, doing inquiries, that kind of thing.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know the stage to which it went, but he was quite involved, and I had a fair amount of contact with him by at that time already on detailed cases. We discussed the whole strategy of trying to use the Immigration Appeal Board, and I had incidentally done a study of the Immigration Appeal Board, and especially of its humanitarian powers, earlier when I studied law. That study, incidentally, was published and served as the main study of the humanitarian powers of the Immigration Appeal Board until the most recent changes.
Hmm. Okay.
Those powers were a most important avenue, and David had an amazing success in presenting cases to the board and being able to persuade the board of the humanitarian significance of the cases. And there are only a very few. I expect he must have taken several dozen, three or four dozen maybe, cases before the board, and not more than two or three failed, I believe. I don't know the details
yet, yeah.
But that's approximate.
Okay. All right. Continue the narrative here in terms of this committee now.
Maybe I should just add,
mm-hmm.
When the Immigration Act changed in April of 1978, the access to the board was no longer as easy, and since then we have not been able to make appeals to the board.
There is no longer a board?
There is a board, and it still has its humanitarian powers, but legally In every act, it says you can make an appeal if these and these factors are there. And those factors have become much more restrictive, and we cannot get to the board. We cannot.
So they've narrowed
the door.
Access.
That's right. I see. We have not tried. That is an area of study. We have not tried to open that door again. And it deserves to be considered, and maybe there is a way of opening that door again. We haven't done it since 78. Something that deserves attention.
Hmm. Okay. The committee. Any more background or details you want to give me on that?
When we began, we hired David Friesen, and then his wife Helen also became a part-time employee. But in addition, there was a nurse by the name of Eleanor Matthews, who had served as a missionary in Paraguay for many years and who was here on an extended furlough. And she served with MCC for a one-year period then as a volunteer and was widely acclaimed and loved.
During her one-year time here?
During her one-year time here. The
Why?
Reports of her...
So?
Well, I think she was very competent, and the nurses after that, the health agents asked or said, with Eleanor, there was more done in one week than we had been able to do in a year in terms of relating to these Mennonites, in terms of being able to get into their houses and to immunize their children and to check certain health problems. Eleanor seemed to have a way of coming to the door and saying something friendly in German, and the door is opened, and she's a very pleasant person, very kind. It did a lot. Public health authorities after that said, if you can find another Eleanor Matthews for us, we will hire her. Unfortunately, things didn't quite work out that way, and that's a point of considerable regret.
That has basically terminated.
That's right. In addition, we then also hired Elfrieda Breger, who also came on board as a voluntary service nurse. She was trained as a nursing assistant. She has a more timid nature than Eleanor, and was a bit less outgoing, and she is now in the Leamington area, as she was continuously, and has done very good work too. Indeed, the people continue to come to her in significant number, even though formally she is not sponsored by MCC anymore. We thought, indeed she thought, she suggested that maybe it could terminate, and then we did later on. We've had some second thoughts whether that was really the wisest thing, because some of the work has continued, even though the official sponsorship has not, and she has done a lot of work on her own as a volunteer. Bishop Cornelius Queering said to me in April when I visited there that he was very grateful for the willingness of Elfrieda Breger to do the work she was doing.
What is the official mandate of this committee, and I was supposed to say OMIAC, but that name was given to the committee then.
Yes.
Can you explain some of the dynamics there?
Initially, we took the mandate to allow us to work in three areas. One, we could call advocacy work or paperwork, dealing with immigration and citizenship status. The objective there was to try, either by citizenship or by landed immigrant avenues, to get secure legal status for the people in Canada. Thus, they would not be in danger of being deported. They could live a bit more confidently, and so on. That has remained a very important part of the work. Secondly, we saw the mandate as allowing us to work in the area of health care. And Elfrieda and Eleanor worked in that area. Thirdly,
Eleanor's was for a one-year period, and Elfrieda was a little bit over a year, 18 months. Correct.
Was it 15 or 18?
Something like that, yeah. Maybe 15.
I don't recall the details, but something in there. And then we also considered doing some things in the area of education. That, unfortunately, never really got off the ground. We held a number of meetings. We talked. We had one meeting to which we invited the superintendent of the private schools, which the old order Mennonites operate here. I believe it's the old order, or is it the Amish? Whatever. There are a number of small private country schools. I'm told they number almost 40, but I'm not sure about that. I believe the superintendent's name was Bowman. Then we also talked with a school principal in Leamington, Henry Fleming. Then we considered the matter of setting up a private school. We talked with old colony people about it. There was considerable sympathy and encouragement. One man, Mr. Giesbrecht, I recall saying, in response to my question, "Look, do you think it would be possible even to have a Mennonite school where you and your children and those of the EMMC people would get along in reasonable peace?" And he said, "Well, there would be problems, but I would rather live with those problems than the problems with which we have to live now. Some of our children who have gone through the school here, they just want to leave. They don't like it in Canada. They don't want to raise their families here. They complain that especially in the junior high level, from there on, somehow the school environment was not a happy one for them." In spite of all those discussions, MCC did not take the step of trying to set up a private school. My own personal feeling was the impetus for that will have to come from somewhere else than from me. I felt I had about all I could do in terms of trying to keep the effort to procure legal status. I shouldn't say that it was my job to keep it on the road. That wouldn't be true, but still there was somewhat of... it required a great deal of scrutiny, and without being immodest, I would say that I understood the laws, the regulations, and the procedures considerably better than any other committee member, and I was quite involved from that at the Ottawa level, and it was quite, we tried then very hard also to familiarize other people aside from our own staff person with the procedures, and to an extent that was successful, although not completely. That whole matter of self-help was didn't develop quite as fully as we initially thought it might, but then I think some of our initial expectations were a little unrealistic. There was one significant development in there, and that is that early in 1976, February, David Friesen, rather, my first case took place in November of 1975. David Friesen called me and said, "There's a person by the name of John Hildebrandt who is about to be deported. And I maintain that he is a citizen, or at least has a claim to Canadian citizenship. But the government doesn't want to recognize it, and it looks like they're going to send him out. Can you try to do something about that in Ottawa?" Well, I called the Citizenship Registration Branch and had a long conversation. With an official there, and it was a peculiar conversation in the sense that they But she was not very willing to give in at all, and she was very forceful and very abrupt, and I refused to hang up the telephone and kept asking why this and why that. The principal argument that I made was that the Citizenship Act empowered citizenship officials to register this particular John Hildebrand on the basis of a delayed registration provision. I say it empowered the officials to do so. It did not obligate them to do so. It was a discretionary power. John Hildebrand did not have a right to it. He should have been registered before his second birthday, but that had not taken place. The law required at that time that anyone born out of Canada, out of Canadian parents, can retain or has a right to retain Canadian citizenship if he is registered before his second birthday. After that, it is a matter of discretion, and the officials may register such a person if they want to, but they don't have to. And the Citizenship Registration Branch had said to itself, we will use as a guide the matter that they become landed immigrants. If they become landed immigrants, then we will take that as an indication of their serious intent to make their homes in Canada, and then we will use the provision for delayed registration. So I argued that your refusal to use the provision for delayed registration in this way is a surrender of your statutory powers to the Immigration Department, and you're not doing what you're empowered to do. You are surrendering what you could do behind a cloak of an immigration procedure, which is much more complex, which was set up for a completely different purpose. It wasn't set up for the purpose of establishing the seriousness of anyone's intent. It was set up for the purpose of screening people so that Canada would get only the right ones, rather than establishing seriousness of intent to remain here. The procedure, the point system is set up so that people will, those who come here will have enough education and enough economic skills to fend for themselves. Strangely, in spite of a very abrupt difficult telephone conversation, it ended with saying, well, you can appeal to my superiors if you don't like it. And I said, well, if that is the only avenue, then I probably will do that. And I wrote a letter then to the minister, and then delivered it by hand the next day to this official as well. And then she said, I have some good news for you, Mr. Jansen. This Mr. Hildebrand, we have found, suffers from an illness, and therefore we will give him special consideration. Well, that is significant only because when that became apparent, then David Friesen sent me a box full of cases, 13 families, with whom a lawyer in London, Tom Rankin, had been working for many, many months, I would say maybe even a year, and hadn't been getting anywhere. He had been trying to get immigrant status for them. And of course they couldn't make the points. Not only that, they should really apply from the outside. Well, when I first saw that box, a big box full of Mexican documents, for 13 families, I didn't know what to do with them. Couldn't read any Spanish, I didn't really know the citizenship law that well. But after letting the box sit on my desk for a week or two, I finally opened it and said, we'll just have to do something. And I wrote up a long memorandum, 17 pages I think, outlining in more detail to the citizenship office why all of these people ought to be given citizenship status. And that was, the date of that letter is March 23, 1976, and it was really a plea that they exercise their discretionary power favorably. It wasn't an argument saying that these people have the right to citizenship, which they didn't have, but it was an effort to establish the strength of their connections with Canada and various other things, the seriousness of their intent, etc. It was an appeal on a humanitarian, you know, a discretionary, when a law empowers officials to use discretionary authority, then you can make an appeal on the basis of humanitarianism as well, although that alone may not get you all that far, but it has to be done within a certain context. So then throughout the summer of 1976, we worked on those cases. There were a few cases where not all the documents were there, and we got some additional documents from Mexico, for grandparents, and from Saskatchewan and Manitoba. And in the course of that, we became fairly close friends with one citizenship official, Mrs. Lorena Warnock. My brief, my submission, together with that that box full of documentation for the for the 13 families, had landed on her desk. She had been asked to deal with it, and I can't look upon that as anything else than as a very providential act of the Lord. She soon came around to visit and began to ask about Mennonites, and it wasn't too long, and she said to me, this may be a little bit personal, Mr. Jansen, but these people here, they're Mennonites, and I've gone to all the libraries here in Ottawa, and I've read a number of books about Mennonites. They are different in a certain way, and you also claim to be a Mennonite. You know, what's Mennonitism all about? What are you different? Are you different from me? In what sense are you different? Well, I talked a little bit about maybe wanting to have a particular purpose for my life, and if that would result in some distinctiveness, then so be it. Otherwise, I wasn't looking for any particular distinctiveness. That interest continued, and she has been a great help to us until the present time, and things haven't always gone smoothly, but she's been a great help to us. It turned out then that in February of 1977, she received approval from the Registrar of Citizenship, her boss, to approve all of these applications for citizenship. We then, in the process, went out here together one Sunday and had all of these families in one house until that application followed. They had decided that they were going to accept the arguments, they had decided they were going to do it, and we then formalized the applications. That was early in February of 1977, and then a week later the citizenship certificates were issued, and there in one bundle 76 certificates came out. That was quite a beautiful day.
So Dave Friesen was already employed with MTC then?
That's right. At that stage, you know, the certificates were issued on February the 14th, and on February the 15th, a new Citizenship Act came into force.
Right.
It had to be done under the old act. The new act, it wasn't quite sure what would happen. But then, gradually, they decided. It took many, many months. We pleaded and begged and what have you. They decided that they were going to continue to use their discretionary power on that basis. And that just opened the door so that hundreds of people have received certificates of citizenship in the last 2 years on the basis of the provision for delayed registration of citizenship. And people have thus been able to become citizens without first having to become immigrants. And it's been a great help. Those who were then not able to become citizens, and one of the key elements there was whether they were born after, in 1947 or later, because there was a change of law in that year, and people born before then came under a different provision. Those had to become immigrants first. The law required it. There was no possibility of getting around it. So, what happened in many cases there, these people would come in and stay until they received a deportation order, and then the deportation order would be appealed. They would take it to the Immigration Appeal Board.